What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 465 of the Fitness, Food, and Freedom Podcast. I'm Jordan Stoltz, your host, and today I'm going to talk about fallacies. This is an English class or philosophy class or whatever class. It's not any kind of research class. Instead, we're talking about nutrition and we're talking about, you know, just health and fitness in general and some of the common fallacious arguments that are made for things in nutrition. I'm going to talk a little bit about five different things that I see all the time in people in our space that argue about nutrition, have opinions, or make claims. And I believe these are really important to recognize and kind of have in your tool belt to know, because if you don't know the fallacies, you won't know what's true or not. Essentially, your BS meter is not too good. So knowing these fallacies is really going to help you have the proper tools to know what's true and what isn't, and what you should believe and kind of take action on in your own fitness journey. So that's what I'm going to talk about today. Thank you for joining me. Let's get started. So I'll start today with the little intro. I like to kind of talk a little bit about what is going on in my own fitness journey. We had some kind of guests and company this last couple weeks, so it took a brief content hiatus for 1 week, kind of a vacation of that, I guess, after being pretty consistent for a good amount of time here. Decided to just take a little break from it instead of trying to force the space and the time to go do that when there are people staying with us. So no podcast last week, back on the grind this week. Thank you everyone for tuning in and for any messages I got over that time period. And I think it's a good kind of time to also mention how I structured fitness and nutrition when we had something like company or guests staying with us, right? Because that can kind of be something that throws people off track because it messes up your routine, right? If you're like me, you really like a structured routine, time set aside in your day at certain times for the gym, for making meals. You have like your basic meal plan. Maybe you track food, weigh food with a food scale, things like that that you don't really want to do when there's other people eating with you or when you're cooking completely different foods for people. So in nutrition, we'll kind of start there. Kind of ate intuitively. Instead of tracking my food, I just took a step back from tracking. No real tracking was done over the last week up until a week ago. So it was last week, Thursday, that this company left. And then I kind of resumed that Friday. So just, it was about Sunday through Thursday, or maybe it was the last Friday before that through Thursday, about a week without any tracking. And when you track for a while, you actually don't rely on it as much. You kind of just build the skill of knowing what good serving sizes are for you, what you're supposed to eat, and you kind of come up with a basic meal, not really a meal plan, more so like a meal template, like a structure, a framework, I guess would be a good word for it. So like for me, I always eat like a pretty high protein, high carb breakfast, fats stay pretty low. So it's, you know, usually a lot of fruit, it's a lot of protein, like from yogurt, milk, something like that. And then maybe something like a breakfast meat or egg or something sometimes. So protein, fruit, basically for breakfast. And then lunch is usually like medium size, which for me and my size and my metabolism is somewhere around 800 to 1,000 calorie lunch, somewhere in there. I can kind of by feel go with that. And I usually eat some kind of vegetables like a salad and maybe a sandwich or a wrap, or maybe it's kind of like a beef and rice bowl type of thing, but you know, basically like a meat that has more fat, some carbs. That's kind of the basic structure with some vegetables. Dinner is kind of more just like moderation of whatever we're going to eat. That's how I do it anyways. So I just kind of followed that same framework, essentially, like just stayed in that basic framework and things stayed pretty much on track, I guess. And in all my meals, tried to just like keep my mindset on protein, fiber. That was like the things I was thinking about, right? It's not like how much is a cup as I'm serving up this and that. It was more like what has a lot of protein on the table, what has a lot of fiber on the table. I'll just kind of focus on those things and build my meal around those. And that helped because that is going to fill you up, prevent you from overeating, and make sure you're satisfied at the end of the meal and not just continuously snacking afterwards. So that was essentially how I did. I trained as much as possible on the exercise side of things. It didn't happen every day like I prefer, but still got in 4 times in the week, which is plenty for muscle growth. And I was kind of able to move some things around. So kind of a beauty of having a home gym is you don't really have to leave. You just kind of like whenever you have time, you can slip in there and do your workout. So I was able to do that some of the days, not all of the days. My weight stayed pretty much in line with what I wanted to do. Was in a cut and still lost weight that week, even with a more intuitive loosey-goosey style. And, you know, ended up starting at about 210, now in the cut about to like 202. So kind of marking the end of the cut here pretty much. Switching over a little bit in my nutrition to a very slow gain now. Losing 8 to 10 pounds was kind of always the goal. And lean enough, feel good, appetite's back for sure, and kind of feel good going forward at this point out of the fat loss phase for a little bit. And we'll see what it holds kind of come spring. You know, my job, to kind of get back to the subject at hand, my job is a nutrition coach. I do farm, and a lot of my content on YouTube and Facebook and TikTok and everything is about farming because I do a lot of that. But that's kind of like a side thing. My main job is a nutrition coach, 8 hours a day, you know, helping people via emails, video calls, instant chat, all those different things, helping people with their nutrition and creating products around nutrition. That's kind of like my main thing. And nutrition, you know, when you have the full-time job nutrition coach, it's kind of like if you're a car mechanic, or even better yet, if you were a plumber, people would come to you all the time that you know, friends, family, about plumbing problems, right? Like if they have a toilet that won't stop running, they'll probably come to you with that question if they're eating dinner with you and be like, hey, my toilet won't stop running. What should I do? Ask for your advice. If you're a mechanic, they'll come to you, hey, my car makes this weird noise. You know, how do I fix that? They may or not take your advice, but they're just going to see you as the person to ask. It might be totally with the intent of just friendly conversation because that's your profession and they're asking you about something related to your profession, which is pretty cool, right? But nutrition's tricky because it's essentially like you're a politician or a pastor, not in the sense of importance, but in the sense of sensitivity. People are very sensitive and opinionated about nutrition, I find, and it's kind of hard to talk about. Like, I wouldn't talk about nutrition philosophies or approaches at like a group meal or a holiday or a social event or a family get together because a lot of people have opinions and anecdotes, meaning, you know, something worked for Aunt Sally that didn't work for Uncle Carl. And it's just continues. It's just crazy. Someone reads one book, someone listens to another podcast, someone tracks macros, someone doesn't eat carbs. And it's just like all this disagreement because there's so much conflicting information out there. So many opinions. And what today's episode about is so many fallacies in the arguments that kind of come from that in nutrition. So the big one, like to spoil number 4 or whatever it is the anecdotal evidence one, right? Like it worked for me, so it has to be true. That's one of them. And I'm going to talk about more similar to that today in this episode. We're going to talk about 5 different fallacies. And then talk about at the end a little bit to close out why focusing on principles and studied things is like super important and what you need to do to keep a firm ground and kind of know, you know, that BS meter, keep it going at its full speed, full power all the time, because it has to be the base of everything. Otherwise, you know, what else are you going to go off of? And if you go off of some of the things we're talking about in today's episode, try to change your approach. And if people come at you with different opinions or information or something, now with this information, hopefully you'll have the tools to kind of, you know, recognize those fallacies as, oh, they're not convincing me. This is a fallacy, how they're arguing with this. So we're going to talk about that. First, I want to get into the quote of the day today, which is related to this whole topic, which is just, there is no secret, only science. this isn't like a political statement. This is more just like in nutrition I'm talking about. You know, science is all we truly have as studied information, right? It's hard to focus on the studied basics, like what is researched, what has human studies, what is peer-reviewed, what is in journals, what is proven to be true, not just written in a book, posted by an influencer, you know, posted on a blog or a Facebook post somewhere, not any marketing company trying to sell you something. There's lots of value in that research and the studies. Even those, though, you have to read carefully. Take with a grain of salt. Who's paying for the studies? Are they done on humans? What's the sample size? Like all of these scientific type of questions for study design are really important too. But there isn't a secret to nutrition. And I think that's important to keep in mind. It is just based on science, and it's how you kind of manipulate the variables in your control to your advantage. We'll talk about that later on. So just remember, no magic bullets. You just have to ask yourself, are you doing the really boring basics perfect consistently for a long time? Because most people aren't, I find. We'll get into this because I kind of wanted to keep this episode to about 20 to 30 minutes, and we have five fallacies to go over today. So fallacy number one is the appeal to nature fallacy, which would be perceiving a food as good because it's natural or bad because it's not natural. Super common fallacy and a very hard one. I mean, you know, to preface this, I guess I was going to say it's a very hard one to argue. To preface it, though, it's not really our place, even as nutrition coaches or personal trainers, to argue. Like, let someone figure out their own opinions. Hopefully you can help someone along the way, but like, arguing about nutrition is about as productive as arguing about politics or religion. It's like, you're probably not going to change someone's mind. But you know, hopefully you can answer questions properly, at least knowing this kind of stuff. So an appeal to nature fallacy is, you know, you look at the ingredients list and something is three ingredients instead of six, and you think that's better because it's fewer ingredients, or something says natural on the label, like the potato chips say natural sea salt instead of just normal potato chips with salt, or maybe it says organic on the vegetable label or something like that. To think that food is generally better because of being natural is a fallacy, which means it's a bad way to argue something because it's not always true, right? There could be truth in it. You could have a food that's natural be better than not natural, but why, I guess, ask yourself the question, why is natural better? Because there's a lot of things that are natural that aren't good, right? I mean, some mushrooms, raw milk can be dangerous. Cocaine is natural. Like, these are extreme examples, but you get the idea. Natural doesn't always mean better, and processing can actually be a good thing. You also have to think about, I could go on and on about this, which might not be useful, but I'll try to keep it short. Process can mean a lot of things too. Process could mean pickled or cooked. You're technically processing food in different ways. Like, where do you draw the line at what's processed? Is it if it's a factory versus your home? Like, how is that related, and why does it suddenly become bad at a certain point at that line, right? So remember, natural does not always equal better, and processed doesn't always equal worse. You do need to keep in mind how foods affect behaviors. I think that is what to keep in mind with the whole natural versus processed argument is, like, are you going to overeat processed foods? Yeah, you're more likely to. So if you have the choice between eating a baked potato and a bag of potato chips, look at the calorie content first. Like, are you eating more calories with one or the other? And then which is more likely to have you overeat? And it's probably the processed food most of the time, but that doesn't mean that food is bad. It just has to be more tightly controlled and monitored for your serving sizes. Fallacy number two is the appeal to irrelevant or false authority, meaning you're considering a person to be an authority on a topic because of something totally unrelated to that topic, meaning someone is a PhD in something, or a doctor, a medical doctor, so you assume they're an expert in nutrition, or they're a celebrity, so you think them selling a supplement is actually worth anything, or an influencer with, you know, a million followers, so you consider them a relevant source of information on nutrition or training or something, when all you're really giving them as authority is that follower count, that fame, that status, or the letters by their name. You know, actual authority in the field should be a studied person with education, with experience, maybe letters in their name that have to do with that field, but find, you know, a variety of sources of information for yourself as well. It's all out there, and you don't have to rely on a certain authority. Definitely don't rely on authority that isn't an authority in the field at all. Very, very common. I mean, you know, TV doctors, influencers, authors, like all of these are prime examples of this. Fallacy number three is the anecdotal evidence fallacy, which I talked about a little bit in the intro here, about considering, you know, something to be true or making a sweeping generalization is how more philosophy websites and stuff will put it, a sweeping generalization about something because of a personal experience. So like, I cut out seed oils and lost 20 pounds. Thus, seed oils are the cause of obesity. Or I cut out soda and lost 10 pounds. Soda's bad for you. Like making that jump, or, you know, it's just because like, that's great. That was a problem for you. And maybe that did work for you, but because it worked for you, doesn't always mean it works across the board. Now, I do believe there is a ton of value in anecdote. I mean, I think that is a huge value of trainers, is like, if someone works with dozens and hundreds and thousands of people over the course of time, they really learn their craft well based just on anecdote. Like, all of these different case studies give you more tools and approaches to use for people in the future. It doesn't always have to come from studies alone. But just anecdote from yourself or one or two clients doesn't mean something's true across the board. And these could always be paired with other foods, right? Just because someone cut out processed foods and that worked for them doesn't mean that's going to work for everybody. It just needs to be paired with actual good evidence, right? You don't want to just rely on anecdote. It needs to be maybe some anecdote that makes you curious or worked for you, got you the results. And then you can back it up with real evidence and research to kind of base that on something concrete. Fallacy number four is correlation versus causation. This is one I've probably talked about before and likely the most common one I see in nutrition and any kind of fitness research, studies, like those viral Facebook type articles you see all the time. It's implying a cause and effect when there really isn't a cause and effect. It's just things happening at similar times, right? So like, I mean, this is just like a rabbit hole of stuff we could go down with this one, because you see this all the time. Like maybe it's, we'll say seed oils again. This is just on my mind about seed oils from some stuff I was reading. So I'll pick on it. Like, oh, I started eating more seed oils and gained 10 pounds. Like, one, that's an anecdote. Two, you're applying a cause and effect, that the seed oils are what caused you gain 10 pounds. But that couldn't necessarily be true because it's not a causation, right? It wasn't the seed oils being the only variable that was changed. It just correlated with the 10 pounds. So there could be tons of things that changed. Your activity, your age, your hormones, your, you know, workouts changed, your total calorie intake changed, your sleep changed. All these other things could affect as well and cause that weight gain to occur. It could be supplements using correlation, causation, many, many examples in the fitness industry of making the leap to something being a cause instead of just correlated with something. And you need to be really careful on what jumps you're making when thinking about the relationship between two things. Cause and effect is a very studied thing. So if something does cause something, you will find research, good research on that. The fifth one is ad hominem attacks, which are attacking the person rather than the argument. This is like a social media argument tactic, right? It's like, you know, this person puts out some information about, you know, sugar not being bad for you. And then someone will say, you're sponsored by Big Sugar, you know, or you're sponsored by Big Egg or Big Dairy or something like that. You know, doesn't even matter if it's true or not. You are taking an ad hominem attack, meaning you are going at the person instead of their argument. Instead, come up with a good rebuttal to their argument based on your own research and evidence. not the person. This could even go as extreme as just saying, well, this person has a bad past, so they're giving out bad information. That doesn't really compute, right? It's not always related. So beware of attacks on specific things about people too. And evidence versus evidence is what we're looking for. Again, like I said earlier, what we want are principles, right? Do your own research, find credible sources in the industry to follow. And I can give you some of those if you want to reach out to me about them. But the principles are what's really important here, folks. You don't have to do scientific research and read studies and peer-reviewed articles to know things about nutrition. You just have to realize what basics are studied and important for your progress. So, you know, what is it? It's really like four things or something. Number one is quantity. Like that, we know quantity is the main thing. Calories in, calories out is true scientifically. In physics, thermodynamics, it's a law. You have to, you know, follow this principle to really understand how to gain or lose weight. Once you understand that principle, that scientific, very, very studied principle that's become a law of nature, you can understand how different diets work, why something worked for you, why something doesn't work for you, why something caused weight gain, caused weight loss. It's a huge, huge eye-opener when you understand calories. We know protein's important, right? That's another principle. Protein is the building block of muscle. It's going to help you retain muscle while you're dieting, build muscle while you're bulking. It's going to keep you more full. It's going to keep you satiated and probably live longer overall. There's no risks or disease associated with a moderately high protein diet, an extremely high protein diet possibly, but anything around that 1 gram per pound of body weight range, perfectly safe according to all research. We know micronutrients play a big role in health and longevity, right? Getting your proper vitamins and minerals, a balanced diet, colorful vegetables of all different kinds. They are important. It's not just about calories. It's about getting healthy food in your diet as well. If you're focused on health and longevity, right? You could totally ignore micronutrients and probably be all right for weight loss and weight gain, but who just wants that? Micronutrients are important. So eat a variety of fruits and vegetables, meats, whole grains. That's kind of where the natural foods can come into play as being very useful. And then consistency, like the quote of the day, is the most important thing, right? Are you really eating the right quantity, the right protein, tons of micronutrients for a long time consistently? Are you doing those things for 8 years straight, right? Or are you doing it for 8 weeks straight and not sure why things aren't working as fast as you want? So now you're looking for the magic bullet. These are the kind of things you need to think about and take the approach with, because it's not always as black and white as you think, I guess. So that consistency really matters too. That's my fallacy episode today. Hopefully, you know, this one might be a little bit different as far as topic is concerned, getting a little bit nerdy in the weeds, but hopefully you guys enjoyed it and it provided you some value. I think it's important to understand where, you know, what fallacies people could be coming from when they're arguing online, even in person, or, you know, coming at you with some kind of opinions. It's very common in the space and very hard to not be swayed or even come back with a proper argument. Not that it's even our job to do that in the first place, but it's going to happen if you're in this field. And hopefully this provided you with some kind of tools and use that you can approach these a little bit better and cleaner. So thank you for joining me and for listening to another show. I'll be back with more episodes next week and more content on the YouTube channel. Be sure to go subscribe to Stoltz Fit on YouTube if you're not yet. And, you know, go check out some of the training vlogs over there and some other good content I have coming out on that platform. More to come. Thank you for listening. Talk to you later.